Recording 19-17. The following message was recorded at the 2019 Oregon Christian Homeschool Conference, sponsored by the Oregon Christian Home Education Association Network, a 501c3 corporation in the state of Oregon. It is funded entirely by donations from families like yours. Ocean Network is founded on the principle that children are a heritage unto the Lord. Parents have the right and responsibility to direct the education and upbringing of their children. Won't you join us in this pursuit? This recording is copyrighted by Ocean Network and the presenter. No unauthorized duplication or distribution is permitted. Your library of recordings from this and other events can be found at alliancerecordings.com. This is Aptitude or Attitude. Is this Can't or Won't? By Help Elevate Learning Processing. Recording 19-17.
All right, let's get started. My name is Bill Hartner. I'm the director of HELP. I'm the founder. Started HELP in 1984, and we've been going for 35 years. We have a new name now. It's no longer HELP Eliminate Learning Problems. It's HELP Elevate Learning Processing. Still the same acronym, H-E-L-P. So if you're looking for help, then you've found the source for some of that help. In our national or actually international statistics, we find that 1 in 5 have some processing issues. Now, if you have, say, 5 children, you might find that 4 of them do just fine. And there's that one child that you just don't get traction. It's just not clicking. They're smart. It's just not reacting. There's no connection. They're not applying what you're presenting. And I think some moms, if that's their first one, they think it's their problem, that they're not a good teacher or something. Maybe they just aren't doing it right. Hopefully, at the end of this session, if you feel like that this will help you understand that it has nothing to do with you or your teaching ability. All right. I'm going to bring out a couple of things here from our case history. We give this to everyone. And it says, which of the following symptoms apply? And we have this list of symptoms. Now, think about these and think about your children or maybe your spouse. slow reading, poor reading comprehension, poor memory, usually short, but sometimes long as well. Dyslexia, difficulty following directions, poor follow-through, easily distracted, difficulty staying on task, finds time tests more difficult, draws a blank under time stress, can't retrieve, can't think what you know he knows, difficulty using and applying time, hyperactive, impulsive, difficulty with math concepts, or maybe remembering math facts, poor spelling, difficulty sequencing in general information, not just spelling letters, but information, difficulty concentrating, hearing discrimination or confusion, is usually a hands-on learner, and misinterprets social cues and misinterprets environmental cues. Poor self-image. Those are some general areas. We literally have many people come in. All of those are checked, yes. And maybe you're thinking that many of those sounded familiar. There's another section that goes into some of the spatial directional processing issues, and these are some of those to think about as well. Transposes letters, transposes numbers, skips lines in oral reading, skips words in oral reading. Letters such as P and G, B and D, M and W, H and Y are often confused. Confusion in similar words like saw and was, on and no, or 24 and 42. Was there a pattern of frequent stumbling, falling, or maybe even been called accident prone while growing up? Some of these things, if any of those or some of those are yeses, you're wondering what is the reason for this? Is this just inattentive, not being interested? We think about some students being a good student. You don't have to push them. They just do it. And other students, you really have to get out the proverbial whip. What is going on? And if some of those issues prevail, you might be saying things like, but you know this. I know you know this. You know this. We just went over this. It might have been just 10 minutes ago. It might have been yesterday. You kind of feel like Groundhog's Day, the movie, you know, where it's the same day again. And it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. You're trying to do your best as a teacher. You've got good materials. You talk to people. You read. You get online. You get all geared up. And this time it's going to really work. And it just doesn't stick. You're trying to understand how this person thinks. But sometimes you wonder, is this can't or won't? Maybe you're just dealing with, someone's personality difference, or maybe it's their attitude. In fact, the name of this course is Aptitude or Attitude. Well, most of our clients that we work with, whether they're 7 or 70, have a lot of aptitude. They have a lot of potential. They're smart people. Very capable in many areas. Doesn't mean that they're going to do well in the traditional academic area, however, especially those things that have to be managed and kept in order. In 1981, a Dr. Roger Sperry won the Nobel Prize for his research in brain dominance. And at the same time, Drs. David Hubel and Torsten Wiesel were both working in research about different aspects of the brain. Processing was Dr. Hubel. He was working on the physiology and the process of moving information in the brain. And Dr. Wiesel was working on the physics and the muscle involvement, or the potential for new neurocircuitry. Up until then, it was understood, and you may remember when you were taught in school, where they talked to us about, in a certain trimester of pregnancy, the brain was wired. The neurocircuitry, the neural net, was done, and it was going to stay that way forever. They used to give IQ tests to kids in grade school, and that was the end. You never had to take another IQ test because the psychologist said you would never change. Your IQ could not change. But now, today, we know the brain is very plastic. It has the ability to change, and in many ways, it's capable of recircuiting itself. Oftentimes, it doesn't, because we continue doing the same things the same way the rest of our life. It often takes an intervention of some kind. Once in a while, we'll find that people have actually done it accidentally in their lives because of forcing themselves to do a certain thing. Some of the moms I've talked to said, that was me. I was that kid in school, but when I got married and I had all those responsibilities, I forced myself to get more organized, and I had to succeed. And they became a lot more bilateral. They became lots more balanced. So from that research from the Nobel Prize winners in the 1980s, Dr. Winkleman from up in the battleground area was glad to hear about that, because his own son was very bright and he had failed the third grade twice. And he said, enough of this. And he set out to try to figure out a way to learn how his son processed information. And he was elated to find out about this brain dominance approach. And one of the things that came out of Dr. Wiesel's experimentation was he tried to put live brain cells in culture and stimulate them with low electric shock. He tried to stimulate them with every enzyme the body was capable of producing, and and nothing. They just laid there in culture and did nothing until he introduced the property of muscle. When he did that, he watched them sprout out like potatoes in the cellar. And they had lots of little neurons reaching out trying to find synapse. And he went, voila, that's it. If you introduce the muscle activity, you're going to stimulate that neural process of reaching out and making that connection. So literally what we do in the HELP program is get the two sides of the brain to work together at the same time. So let's talk about what those two sides do, just to kind of remind ourselves of what that looks like. The left side is the linear side. It processes information in a line, which is what linear means. And it is very logical, but it is very concerned about the space or the place in space of information. So as you see, I've made a chain underneath the word or the letter L because it's the logical linear side and it likes to keep things in place. Now, the right side has little in common with that left side. The right side is very random and loose and scattered. The information is there, but it's very loose and floating around. It's spatial, global. Now, the right side isn't very concerned about the order of the information. It might take this piece, it might take this piece, and then put those together and make a conclusion. But mostly what it is a feeling. It's the feeling side. The right side says, I have a feeling about what you've just told me. So you say, do you understand? And he says, yeah, I understand. Well, later, he can't reproduce that. He has the feeling, he remembers you talking about it, but when you quiz him, he's not going to give you the details. And he can't express and explain what it means, but he has a feeling on it. Now, the left side is going to understand the words individually. It's going to understand them in that sentence, and it's going to be able to retrieve it and explain it. Why does it retrieve it and the other side doesn't? Well, the left side saves information in a very different way. You could compare it to a file system, okay? And the file has, like any good file, a label that says what will be found in that file. And it's very fast, it's very efficient. When you want it, it's there. It's right where you left it. Where would you look for it? Except where it is. You wouldn't look where it isn't. That would be silly. So you look where it is and you find it. So what about that right side? Oh, it saves information, not to be outdone by the left side. However, it is not a file system. It is instead a pile system. Is it in there? You bet it's in there. Is it fast? Not so fast. No. In fact, it is so slow to find that it is easier to reinvent the wheel than it is to look up how to make the wheel. So what you end up doing is you see this person redoing something that you've taught them how to do, and you say, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing it. That's not how I taught you to do it. Don't you remember? I said to do it this other way. Oh, well, this works for me. Well, you've been on that for quite a while. This is taking so long. Just do it the way I told you to do it. Well, frankly, he can't remember how you told him to do it. You say, but we've done that over and over. You've done that so many times. How can you tell me you can't remember it? Well, I can't remember it. I'm sorry. It's probably in there a half a dozen times, maybe 20 or 30 times. But does that help? It really does not help. I did a seminar, I do several seminars a year for teachers in service. And when I'm explaining this, I say, you know, you have certain children in your class who you don't understand why they can't remember things for tests. And you know that they know that information. You've worked with them one-on-one, and yet they don't seem to have it. And it's frustrating for you. It's frustrating for their moms. So I asked those teachers, if you were to go to a library where they did not use the Dewey Decimal System and they just let people put away the books as long as they were neatly put away so that you didn't trip over them. If you went into that library, I say to those teachers, and the librarian said, we don't use the Dewey Decimal System, but we do have the book you're looking for. I know, I remember, someone just brought that in yesterday, so we definitely have it. Well, how many books do you have? Well, we have 250,000 books on 4 floors. Well, how am I going to know where to look? Well, just look on the stacks until you find it. How many of you, I say, would go look for that book? And no one raises their hand. And so I say, what if the librarian said, how about if we get our sister library to bring another copy over, we'll put it in will call, and you can come back in an hour and we'll have it. And so the person comes back, and they say, where's my book? It's supposed to be in will call. Oh, it was, but I think someone put it in the stacks. But now there's two in the stacks. Would you go look for it now? Nobody raises their hand. I say, would you if they had 10? No hands. 50? No hands. 1,000? I start to get a hand or two. How many of these concepts are we going to be teaching 1,000 times to that same person? It seems to the teachers that would be a waste of their time to look unless there were at least 1,000 of those copies, because they could be in there for hours or maybe days, and it's just not worth it. Now, would it be fair for the librarian to say to that person who refuses to search for the book without the system, I thought you wanted this book. You obviously don't care. If you really cared, you'd look harder. You haven't even looked. And the person would say, well, no, I'm not going to look. I'm not going to waste my time. That would be silly. No, you're just lazy. Well, the person that we're talking about is one of these teachers, and they're not lazy. They're being realistic. They're being practical. So why would they search and waste time when they're not going to find it immediately? Because that's what they're used to doing. That left side finds things quickly, efficiently, and they can retrieve that and apply it and use it. Now just think about the many decisions you make. You make 35,000 decisions per day. Every one of those decisions has connected to it relevant information that you've pulled quickly from the left side storage, the archived data, your experiential learning. So when you make that decision, in the few milliseconds before you make that choice, many of them are fast, and you have as much data as you can pull together and factor in, and sure enough, you make a better choice. What if you couldn't access that data? You would make a choice without relevant data to support that decision. Someone later might say, what were you thinking? Why did you do that? You should have known better. In fact, I know you know better. You should have factored this in. You should have factored that in. What were you thinking? Well, when you do it right and you pull that information out, then people say, good thinking. Well done. Couldn't have done it better myself. In fact, they're impressed that you made that choice because of the outcome. And of course, if the outcome is poor, they're apt to say, as I said, what were you thinking? All right, what's the difference? Well, if you can't access the information, you can't apply the information. If you can't apply it, it doesn't make sense. It isn't relevant. It's just stuff. It might as well be Japanese kanji. It might as well be, hieroglyphics, something like that. So when you're working with this person, if their processing system is using the right side of the brain to try to understand, store, and retrieve left brain linear data, it is not going to work well. Now, the right side, it'll tackle anything. It'll say, I can do it my way. I can figure out a way. And if they've got enough time and you can keep them on task, they may muddle through that in 2 to 3 times the amount of time and actually come out with a pretty good outcome with some coaching and prompting from the sides. But the next day you expect that to be somewhat faster, and the next day faster, and so on. But you end up doing the whole groundhog thing again. So what we're talking about then is, how do we get that right brain and that left brain to work together? Now, certainly if the left brain tries to do art, it's not going to do well. And if the right brain tries to do a sequential logical task, it's not going to do well. So if we can get them both to work together on the same job at the same time, they're going to use their skills and strengths in a collaborative, balanced way, and then they make a better judgment call. Now, afterward, we see our families, maybe their relatives, their aunts and uncles, grandparents, that don't see them for maybe 6 months to a year until they're at a reunion of some type. They're apt to say to that parent, after the student has completed our program, "Wow, he has really matured since the last time I saw him." Why would they use the term matured? Well, because they thought, and maybe even said, "What was he thinking before?" and wondered what's going on or what's not going on in his brain. And this time they've watched that person interact and be aware of so much more data around them that they're impressed with the way they crunched that data into action and said the things or did the things that were more appropriate. And not just at age level, that would have been great, but above age level. So the aunt or grandparent is really quite impressed, and they might comment and say, "Wow, good thinking, well done." One parent said, came in recently and said that the aunt was there at a reunion and observed that the child had disappeared, was not with the rest of the family. Everybody was doing stuff, and it was during the day, and he was not there. She went looking around and found him in his room doing some homework, and she goes, "Ah, busted, huh? Mom made you come in and do homework, right?" And he said, "No, I just thought it'd be better to get it done now when we aren't doing really anything cool, but tonight we're going to, you know, shoot off fireworks or whatever, and we're going to have some fun things, and I don't want to be in here doing it then." And the aunt said, "So you decided to come in and do this?" He said, "Yeah." And so she went out and said to the child's mom, "Wow, he has really matured." Well, his left brain prompted him internally and said, "You know, the stuff going on now isn't all that great. Why don't you just get this off your plate? Do it now. And later, you'll have more freedom, more fun. You might not get to watch that movie if you haven't done your homework. And, ooh, yeah, let's just do this." So we see that kind of thing happen, and it's exciting to see. We do a program that teaches you how to work with your own child. You work an hour a day to get those two sides to collaborate, work on the same task at the same time. It's very spatial. The judgment involves a lot of spatial judgment. That's a tough one for the right side of the brain. It starts off, and it's very difficult, very frustrating, and then finally they can master that level. We raise that level, make it a little harder, and then they master that level, and we just keep raising the bar. But it's also directional. They have to make fast directional decisions. Which way should I do something based on some kind of very linear scale or code? And so the only way they can do it is to get that left side involved. And the more they do it, the more they can do it. And so, again, back to that earlier mention of the muscle in the Petri plate with the nerve cells, every single thing we do in the program has something called a motor match. That's the culmination of a physical motor active task with the culmination of the pulling up and enunciation of a linear left brain symbol, like a letter in the alphabet, a number in the number scale, something like that. So the two have to happen simultaneously. And when we can get our student to do that, that forces both sides to work together. And then again, as I said, we just raise the bar by adding a controlled distraction. So they're doing the task, they're doing it well, and your job as the coach, if you're working with them at home, would be to say, wow, that was great, you mastered that, that was perfect. Now let's do it one more time. This time I'm going to ask you a stress question. You can't answer it until you're done. That means you're going to have to file it, not pile it, and then pull it up and answer it after you've completed your task. So in the middle, you might say, what are your three favorite toppings on a pizza? And the right side of the brain might go, ooh, that's interesting, and get distracted. Or the left side might say, put that on file, we'll talk about it later. When he's finished, if he's done it right and he's filed it, he'll pull it up and say, pepperoni, mushrooms, and olives. And you say, great, you did your task, you heard the question, you didn't get distracted, and you saved it. Now, if he's not ready for that, he'll end up with the pepperoni, mushrooms, and olives, and he will have messed up the task. Or he might do a perfect task and say, oh, I have no idea what you said. But if we can get that to happen once, we'll do it again and do it twice. And then we'll have two stresses. And if he can handle two, we'll give him three. So that's the way we take these step by step through the program. We would like to take a little bit of time here at the end to have one of our families. Our mom, we've got a mom here, Kimberly, and we've got another mom, have a seat, and we'll take this time now to have them talk a little bit about their experience. First, Kimberly. Do you want this?
What do you want me to say?
Oh, whatever you'd like to. Before, what was it like before? What was it like after? That kind of.
I think it's more interesting to hear it from my daughter. She can tell you what it looked like before for us and what it looks like now. And as we've been listening to Bill talk, she keeps nudging me and saying, Mom, that sounds like me. And saying, what were you thinking? She goes, Mom, you would say that over and over in different ways. So here, let me share it with Haley. It's Haley's turn. So Haley, what were your challenges before help?
I would not think before I did something. I was easily distracted. I was argumentative. I would take three times the amount of time to do my schoolwork. Math was hard. Memorizing information for school was hard.
So what have been the improvements? What improvements have you experienced?
I am less impulsive, and I think through the effects of my actions. I get my schoolwork done well with multiple distractions. I acknowledge people. I get my work done quickly and sometimes before breakfast. I love math. I have brain tools in my tool belt to help me memorize information. The most important thing that I've learned is anything hard today will be easier tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you so much. We've got two mics.
Okay. Oh, okay, great. My daughter in the public school system until the second grade was not able to complete her work, and I didn't know if that was a willful or not, but the teacher seemed to see she was just keeping along just fine, but having three, you know, higher intelligent kids before her, I saw the same, you know, like advanced humor and things with her, but she wasn't able to complete any work, and the teacher wasn't worried. She was falling behind with reading, things like that. So we homeschooled for a couple of years, and I heard about help, and it took us a year before we decided to do it. But we did the evaluation, which was on special, and it gave us some ideas about what levels of the 12 different areas of the brain.
That was the MAP test, right?
Yeah, the MAP test, right. Thank you. We're not... you know, she was like off the charts college level in one area, but she'd be below in three or four others. So anyways, beforehand, then she would procrastinate and be discouraged a lot. But coming weekly and getting encouraged, the confidence just blowing out of the water for her. afterward, she's able to. So we did homeschool for a couple years, and then she went back into public school. This last year, she got straight A's in middle school. She's up to grade level. She's doing her work without me managing any of it. And she's just blossomed and able to feel like she's got control over her learning. And so it was hard work. I won't lie there. It was definitely hard work, and it took a lot of will to continue. It took her 8 months to finish the program, and she was so proud when she was done, and as we are too.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Did you have anything to add, Kimberly? Okay. All right. Very good. Questions? Anyone? Pardon me?
As far as the location, like we're doing the test. And
right. That would. The question was, where are we located? We're up between West Lynn and Lake Oswego, up south of Portland. And we would do the testing right there. We're on the campus of the Merrill Hurst University. Test takes about, it's designed to be 2 hours. We leave an extra hour just in case. A lot of our students are real slow at getting the information clear before they start doing the section. It takes a while just to understand what we want them to do. And, you know, you magnify that by 12 different subtests. Might be as long as 3 hours instead of 2 hours. So we have that extra buffer just in case. Then when we're finished, you just stay right there and we'll go over the results immediately. You don't have to come back for a second appointment. And that's nice, especially if you have to drive very far. The program then is done an hour a day. We would teach you how to do it, and then you would work with that student each hour, each day for 5 days, and you'd come in once a week. And I think, as I mentioned before, the student sees that as kind of a show-off day because they're coming in to show off all the cool things that their brain can do since last week. Whereas at school, it's like, oh, I don't want to go to school today because what if I get embarrassed? What if the teacher calls on me and I don't have the right information? And what if I have to blow a test? But if you're pretty sure that you're going to be able to show off, that's pretty exciting. And you know that somebody there is going to be waiting to see how you did. And you know what else is cool is that nobody else in the world that they know can do these things as well as they can. Whereas like math and history and spelling and writing and all the other things, there's always the neighbor or the sibling or the cousin who's the same age who's just blowing them away and doing really well. So this is their thing. It's something that maybe if they've got that sibling that does really, really well in that area and they don't do so well, at least the sibling can't do as well in these unusual brain activities that they're doing, because we're doing some very strange things, and yet they can do them well. And that's exciting. That's important, I think. Any other questions? Yes.
I just wanted to add, for my daughter, one of her lowest areas was audio memory, and that was like, aha, no wonder she can't finish. She hears it, she comprehends it, but when she goes to do it, then she couldn't pull it back out. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it was like, and then all of these processes, unusual brain active, you know, actions that we're doing, made it possible for her to do that and elevate that level. When she retested, she was above her grade level or age level.
In the auditory.
Yeah,
exactly. The auditory is huge because there's going to be lectures, there's instructions on the job. The boss says cut 5 pieces 10 feet long, and they cut 10 pieces 5 feet long with confidence. And the boss says, you never listen. And the person says, I did listen. That's what you said. Look, I wrote it down. But if it's flipped, it's flipped before they write it down. It's garbage in, garbage out, just like computers. So we see a lot of change in that area. When the auditory changes, it has a huge domino effect in so many other areas. And as I said before, the spatial process is something that we don't think about as a process. It's something that you judge automatically, where's the edge of the step? Where's the edge of the doorway? Where's the edge of the table? That's a basic judgment of space. But spatial placement in a sentence, the structure of the sentence. Do you end in a preposition? Well, yeah, but that's not according to the rules. You're not supposed to end your sentence in a preposition. Well, how would you say the same thing and not end in a preposition? Well, I don't know. Well, they've got to be able to put that together in their brain and spatially move the pieces around and try it again, but they're going to have to write it down on paper two or three times and erase and try it, and it gets overwhelming. But if you can do it in your head, it's just instant, and you think, no, oops, I can't say it that way. I'd end in a preposition. I'll move the subject and the predicate around and the nouns and the verbs, and now there, that sounds right, says the same thing, and it doesn't end in that preposition. So you can teach someone that, but if they can't apply it, if they can't break it down and see where those things are and put them back in place correctly, or you teach phonics, you know, when there's that other vowel, it makes the first one say its name, and they go, but not in this case. In this case, it should be this. Well, no, it's this instead. I speak Italian, and I think about Italian, and there's no exceptions. The rule is the rule. And so if you see these letters, they make these sounds. If you see them in a different word, they make the same sound as they did in the other word, which seems pretty logical, but our language isn't that way. Poor Giuseppe comes, tries to learn English, and he goes, puff is P-U-F-F. We say, that's right. Then tough must be T-U-F-F, right? No, we say O-U-G-H. And so he goes, O-U-G-H is off? Huh, so I walk through for the doorway. No, Giuseppe, you walk through the doorway. O-U-G-H is a ooh? It's a not a uff? No, it's ooh now. So he leaves a note on a post-it. I've gone to the store. T-O-U-G-H. Ooh, too. And we say, no. It's not O-U-G-H this time. It's T-O. Well, that makes a sense. T-O. But sometimes it's T-O-O. And other times it's T-W-O. But it sounds so similar. No, it's the same word. You say the same word, you spell it three times, three different ways. Ma che lingua stupida. So that's the problem with trying to teach someone who's having trouble holding it in the file. You think about how you spell and how you read. You have a file copy. If you see it misspelled, your brain has an alarm system that says, alarm, alarm, this is not right. It doesn't look right. You can see the file copy. It doesn't match up with the one in front of you. Your confidence tells you that's misspelled. This guy that we're talking about, no. If it's different on the book, even though it might be a typo or a misspelling on the book, it's in print. It must be right. So he doesn't have a file copy. I remember myself down in like the third grade, we were reading about Lyle the crocodile, and I couldn't spell crocodile. And the teacher got really upset at me, and she said, picture it in your mind, Billy. And I said, I can picture it fine in my mind, but that doesn't help me spell it. It's got buggy eyes and sharp teeth. I could draw you a picture of it. And she looked at me and just with exasperation and shook her head. And I know now what she meant, but I didn't then. She meant picture the word crocodile in your mind and then just see the letters and write it the way it looks. I didn't know people could picture words in their mind. I never could. I never saw a word unless I was looking at a word. You know when that changed? When I was 37, after I had completed the method that we use now. It was a different method by the doctor that developed the method. In those days it was called Learn to Learn. I was the first adult student to go through that treatment. And on the way home from work, the little green signs with the white words that said Elm Street and Oak Street were passing by my peripheral vision, and I thought, what's going on? They're telling me their name. And I didn't need to know them. I mean, I was on my way home. I knew where I was going. I was driving past them, but I didn't need anything from those signs. And they were telling me each in their turn as they went by my peripheral vision what their name was. I got home and I said to my wife, the weirdest thing happened today. And I told her and she goes, yeah, you read those signs. I said, no, I didn't. I didn't want to read them. I wasn't trying to read them. They just told me their names. She said, you saw them? I said, well, kind of. I saw out of the corner of my eye. Well, then that's why you were hearing their names. But I said, I didn't want to know. I wasn't trying to read them. She said, you can't stop that. I said, you mean when you see words, you can't stop it from telling you what the word says? She says, when you see words, you don't automatically know? And we had been married a long time then, and she still didn't know that about me, and I didn't know that about her. So I said, you're telling me that it's automatic? You just scan over it like a red laser over barcodes? And she said, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I said, boy, that makes a lot of sense. And she said, why? I said, well, for years I've been managing businesses, and people would come in and try to sell me space on billboards or on buses or on benches. And I thought, what a stupid waste of money. How do these people ever make a cent? Nobody's ever going to read that. Who's going to want to read that? And I would not say that to them. I'd just smile and say, no, I'm not interested. And as the guy's leaving, I'd think, what an idiot. Why would anyone put money into words on a sign? Who's going to want to read that? What I didn't realize until my wife told me that is they couldn't stop it. It's just brain invasion, basically, that the words come in. And finally, it clicked. It made so much sense. That's why everyone enjoyed reading. And then I remembered when I was a little kid at the beach, I might have been 12 years old, and there was a woman sitting on a blanket. Everyone was having fun but her. She was sitting on a blanket, and she was reading. And I felt sorry for that lady. I thought, oh, how sad. She could be having fun. She's at this great place. It's sunny, and the wind is blowing, and people are throwing the frisbee and splashing in the water. And there she is. She's got to do her homework, apparently. She's got to read. Boy, that's sad. She must really be overwhelmed. And she would put a bookmark in it, jump up, and go throw the frisbee or the football, and then come back and sit down and get right back at it. Boy, she's diligent. What I didn't know was she was watching a movie in her mind, and she wanted to get back to her movie. She had pushed pause, so to speak, and was watching the movie, and then she wanted to come back and pick up on that movie. And it was fun. It was entertaining. She didn't want to not find out what happened next. But I didn't know that until I was 37, because my brain didn't make movies when I read. It was a chore. I told my wife, no, it's not automatic. I have to jump start it every time. I have to want to read bad enough to spend the energy and the time to get from it what I was looking for. And my mother-in-law would give me these wonderful books that were, you know, 4 inches thick on topics that she knew I was very, very interested. And I would read the first page 5-6 times and either fall asleep or just put the book down and give up on it, you know. So, any other questions? Yes.
Is this something that you can continue to work on through your life? Or is this a rewire your brain and you're done? I mean,
the question is this something that you're going to work on throughout your life? In other words, like tricks, memory tricks and things that you have to employ.
Right. Is it something that you have to continue to, or is it like once the brain is rewired, it does it automatically?
That's right. Her supposition then was that, or is it something where you've wired your brain to function a different way, and it then functions that way? Once it functions that way, the realization is this works, this is useful. We can also apply it over here, we can apply it there. Hey, this serves me in sports, it serves me in art, it serves me in my job with relationships. I'm just going to think this way all the time because of the good outcome that it produces. So, yes, to your answer, I'm not saying it wouldn't hurt to do some of the activities. We get college kids telling us that when they have to memorize something that's kind of detached and boring, maybe the periodic table or something, they'll put it up on a chart and do the ball and stick and do some things that they used to do in the program to get that to happen. All right, looks like our time is up, so if there's no other questions, we're going to close this session, and you can come over to the booth if you have further questions. Thank you very much.